Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's premier audio noise. Bit of Shed 7 there. Giving you a hot blast of tech every Friday. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment enema from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK, and Computerworld UK. You can find us on Acast, on SoundCloud, on iTunes, and more. Every Friday, we bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Do not forget to subscribe, review us, and tell your friends. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I'm delighted to be joined in conversation by... She's got class and sass, and she never runs out of gas. She's Miriam Harass.
Hello,
Harris, staff writer of Digital Arts. He's swell, smart as hell, and he has a nice smell. It's Henry Burrell, senior staff writer of PC Advisor.
Hi there.
And he likes organic baby rice, chip spice, and kissing mouldy field mice. It's David Price. Prick. No, Price. Price. Right, first time. The deputy editor of Macworld UK. Today we're talking about Apple's new house, Uber's vice, and a load of old phones. So let's go. Right, enough of that. Miriam Harris, what's not so super about Uber?
Well, I'm sure most people do know, but a blog post from Susan Fowler has been going viral online. She posted it on Sunday about her time at Uber as a site reliability engineer. And Uber has had to publicly respond since then because what she wrote was very scathing. Basically, she joined in November 2015, but her manager was sending her messages, online messages, essentially asking for sex because he was in an open relationship. So she took this to HR, but they said it was the man's first offence. And he got a warning, and that was all. And she could either join another team or get a poor performance review from
what?
Him. So those were her only choices. So she decided to join another team and learnt that other woman engineers had reported the same manager before, so it actually wasn't his first offence. And so he eventually left the company, but it wasn't because of them, and they weren't told why. She took further HR meetings, and they continued to say that it was his first offence. She later requested a transfer to another engineering organisation with a perfect performance score, but she was blocked due to undocumented performance problems. And when she tried to ask a bit further about what that was, they said that performance problems aren't always to do with your work, but can be about your personal life. Oof. So she tried a second time and was denied because it made her manager look good. So basically, she's outlining all these fundamental flaws that she says happened to her because she was a woman in the company.
In the interest of fairness, what's Uber said about this?
They have come out the very next day,
wow.
Actually.
Sorry. They're all gay.
The next day.
It can't be true because we're gay.
They announced an urgent investigation into the claims by they appointed a new chief human resources officer. And the Uber boss, Travis, I don't know how to say his last name. David.
I'm going to go with this. Yes.
Do you guys? I'm not Kalanick. Sure. Not
Kalanick.
Sure.
Kalanick.
Travis? Is that okay if we say that?
Yeah,
let's call him Travis Kalanick.
Yep.
Said that anyone who behaves like this would be fired. He said that on Twitter. And then on Monday, he sent an email to employees saying the company was hurting and they were looking into it. And they've since appointed the former US Attorney General, Eric Holder. He served under Barack Obama and a few others like Arianna Huffington, who's on Uber's board, to look into the investigation. And he had a meeting with the company on Tuesday. I don't know what's happened further with that.
That's not like an outright denial of any of these facts, I guess.
No. It's not. He gave some stats, though, saying that out of engineers, product managers and data scientists at Uber, 15.1% were women. So compared to what he says, Facebook is 17%, Google 18% and Twitter 10%. It's not too different to the rest of those places.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into this, but that would feel fairly standard in the industry, sadly, actually.
Yes, it definitely is. What I found interesting, and I'm not sure if you guys heard about, was this morning I found out that there's a hashtag called Delete Uber going around, and yep. People were just deleting. Yeah, did you see that? Deleting app.
Doesn't that predate these revelations?
Yeah, I think that just comes up every time they do something shitty.
it's just the whole continuum.
But they've got terrible... Yeah. There have been reported cases of them not having great sort of employee standards and relations.
Yeah, exactly. But with this, so if you deleted the app, it would pop up with a note mentioning how they were deeply hurting after Susan's blog. So it was very particular.
So that's a thing that
particular.
Has actually been noticed. And yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they were really like defensive. It was kind of strange.
Also, isn't that really annoying that their reaction to it is not, this is a travesty and we should have dealt with it. It's poor us being
we're
picked
hurting.
On by people reporting things. I mean,
yeah.
Well, because there are a couple... I mean, like, look, this is not mitigation at all, but it is true that tech in general has a problem with gender diversity. And there are all sorts of things that go into that to do with, you know, STEM education and, you know, environment, which I think we should talk about, and kind of the people's view from the outside of what happens in a tech company. But it's not exclusive to Uber. So, you know, they don't have to say that, but that's known. And also Uber is a company that's gone from tiny to huge. And that's when you get structural problems, like with things like HR departments not really being up to speed. So... it's not excusable, but you can imagine a situation in which a rogue person who's an arsehole gets to stay there for a bit. But then the way the company reacts is critical because the first time that's reported, you've got to fire the guy. Mm. And then, you know, even if by some ridiculous scenario you get to this stage, then as you say, David, the reaction has to be, this is terrible. We messed up. What can we do? Not,
we employ more women than Twitter.
Yeah.
Why is that an argument? Is that we have more women to treat badly than other companies?
Basically, they've been really shady with releasing their statistics in the past on ethnicity and gender and religion and things like that, whereas other people have been quite open releasing their government filing reports. So, yeah, and as you said before, Uber definitely has had not the greatest history in the limelight. But I just would like to say it's definitely more than women in terms of tech. It's ethnicity and social class. Yeah. You know, it's diversity is a huge issue. And also creative industries, you know, politics, science, a lot more, which I've been looking at over in digital arts, creative industries. So, yeah, I guess it's huge in these
sectors. So why do we think that is?
Yeah, and who holds the power for change as well? Like how is change going to be brought about? You know, is it the senior leadership needing to really believe in diversity, or is it the employees agitating? Do we need to keep talking about it, setting targets? You know, like
I think about this quite a lot because if you look around our office, there are 5 people on the senior management team, and they are all white men.
Yes.
And you know, why is that? None of those people are inherently sexist, is inherently sexist. But then there are all sorts of factors that come into it, I think. One of which is work culture, definitely. If you're, and I think this has changed in our case, but if you're expected to work extremely long hours for relatively low pay to start off with, that is a bar to people based on lifestyle, gender, their background. I also think we constantly get inbound requests to be an intern. In fact, Miriam, that's how we met you, and that's great. But in order to be an intern, you have to be able to work for free, essentially.
Mm.
And you know.
And it's also the living costs of the city, because yep. often these places are yeah. in London, and it's just impossible
London to, or San Francisco
to do those yeah free internships, and when you can't afford to live there, and that comes back to, you know, social class barriers. Well, how can you afford the software to learn these types of things, you know, getting Adobe on your computer, how are you going to afford that and move to London? You know, it cuts off a lot of people.
But then I think there is also an education thing, which is to do with, if I think about my own education, like, we kind of, and I you know, I'm from a perfectly stable background and my parents really supported me, but we didn't really know it was okay to go to the big city, as it was, and sort of find a career in something that felt in, and this was a long time ago, so it wasn't really tech then, but certainly the creative industries, because people didn't do that. And you know that phrase, you have to see it to be it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important that you see people from your, what you identify as your background, and that can be ethnicity or gender, or it can be class, or it can be region, succeeding in something. You know, it tends to take one and then lots of people follow.
Yeah.
And I suppose the point I would make about that is that if you're serious about gender diversity as an organization, you have to be serious about it, and it's going to cost you some money. You're going to get benefit from it, all diversity, because it makes much more effective use of resources if you've got a mixture of cultures and experiences. But it's probably going to cost you money in the first place, because you have to actively seek to do it, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like we should be more open and specific about exactly what methods are out there to do that. You know, I feel like there's been a lot of talk this year about, oh, diversity, we definitely need more of that.
Yeah.
But exactly how do you do that? What does that mean? Like, I don't know, like blind hiring or unconscious bias training, things like this, putting women in
strategic roles. I mean, I'm all up for hiring some blind people, but I mean...
But do you know what
it's
I mean?
Not even funny, is it? David, you're a ginger. What's your take on this?
I've been sort of keeping quiet because I'm somewhat ashamed of my own introduction to the world of media, because I'm a classic example of the way class works in media. And I know we've drifted away from tech towards media, but I was given my first job in media by my tutor, effectively. I went to Oxford, and so it's classic foot in the door.
Mm.
A guy who was in the same college as me 3 years before, he'd gone to London, he'd got a job on a glossy magazine, and then he wasn't supposed to advertise openly for a new sub-editor, so he contacted his tutor and said, is there anybody promising or who is interested in journalism in your current class? And she said, obviously no, but how about this guy instead? But that's how I got my first job. And if I hadn't had that, I don't know how easily I could have got into this industry, because I'm not, you know, I'm not the sort of person that turns up.
There's nothing intrinsically wrong with that. It's just, if that meant, I suppose the bit that's wrong with it is the door is closed to somebody.
Well, exactly. I mean, we sit there and we wonder why everybody in the office, this was at Condé Nast, why everybody was white and middle class, and it was little things like that. It was, the opportunities are there, but you have to be in a particular situation to take them.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope it's improving. I mean, this is,
I feel like our office is more diverse than it's ever been.
I think so.
And I think part of that is, and again, we're not a tech company, well, we are a tech company to an extent, part of that is to do with us actively seeking to do that, and part of it is, I think, society is changing a bit.
Mm.
But again, we're based in central London, so automatically you have to have access to central London to even think about coming to work somewhere like this.
Mm.
How did that first job go for you, David?
As you know perfectly well, I had to leave under a cloud. But my second job, which I earned off my own back, introduced me to the world of technology, because that first job wasn't tech at all. It was interior design.
Ooh.
It was quite good, but they didn't like me very much, so that ended badly. Let's not talk about it ever again. But yeah, but that's the thing, is I had those 9 months. Yeah, I got kicked out, but I had 9 months of experience after that, and everything in...
It's a lot easier once you... And you know the layout of everything, you know what the jobs are called, you know
exactly
what skills are required.
Yeah.
And again, you know, when I think back to my Dick Whittington getting on a train and coming to London, but I had done a bit of work in sort of regional newspaper office, and even when I was here, I had sufficient resources behind me by selling my car, but a car that my parents helped me to buy, that I could live for those couple of months I needed to get a job and get better at interviews and get a job. And not everybody's in the position to do that, or would even know. Like I say, it was kind of an accident that I understood what the industry was like, because I'd got this first job just kind of by a fluke sort of thing.
One of the things I wanted to talk about a little bit was environment, because, you know, we are all fans of a show like Silicon Valley or something like that, which does send this up a little bit. But the perception externally, and a lot of tech companies, including Uber, do nothing to disabuse us of this notion, is that a cool place to work is a place that has a pool table and a ping pong table and a bar and all these things, which are attractive to a certain kind of person. But Miriam's nodding, so I'm going to go to Miriam next. But they might actually be a negative if you don't like those things. Would that be fair, do you think?
Yeah, or if you don't have the time, if you're a mum and you have to go straight home to your children or a dad, then, you know, that would be great if you could, but you can't, you know? And, yeah, or if you don't like, yeah, that kind of environment, you prefer to work on your own.
Always feels very male to me, I have to say.
Yeah, at my last job, there was like a table, football table, ping pong table, and like a culture that every Friday you just had to go to the pub.
Yeah.
But that immediately discriminates against people, usually women broadly, who just didn't want to, you know, have like horrible banter on a roof playing ping pong
with the lads.
And then go and have like four Heinekens at 4 o'clock. Yeah. So like,
do you remember when Jeremy Corbyn addressed this?
Yeah.
And it's classic Corbyn in that his intentions were good, but he did it
the
so
point was
badly,
right, but he made it in a terrible way, didn't he?
And then the headlines were just, he wants to stop you having drinks after work. But the point he was making was, it was right.
Yeah.
That sort of thing encourages and advantages a particular kind of person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just as I remember very early in his presidency, Obama was criticised for having those pick-up basketball games, and it became a sort of interior circle thing. And people were sort of pointing out, well, that encourages your inner circle to be sporty jocks that like basketball. Mm. And that, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but...
And it was, if to relate it back to our own organisation, I benefit from that, definitely, because we all used to go to the pub on a Friday afternoon, and that was a thing that suited me and my lifestyle then. And that is something we have consciously tried to change. But, you know, it's so subtle, isn't it? It's so insidious, really, which is why, again, it brings me back to the point that I think if you're an organisation and you genuinely want to change, and you should, for reasons both ethical and of performance, you have to actively seek to do it and invest in it, I think. Okay, let's go around the room. Taxi for Uber, or what Uber doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Henry Brill.
Yeah, taxi for Uber.
David Price.
Taxi for Uber.
Miriam Harris.
Taxi for Uber, although I'm not sure what that means.
Don't worry. You've just agreed to something that you're now going to have to hold to for the rest of your life.
Just like Brexit all over again.
Excellent. Okay, we'll take a very short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Apple.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the House of Fun. Now I've come of age. Welcome to the Lion's Den. David Price. Apples normally live in orchards, but Apple is off to a spaceship. You dig?
There is actually an orchard as well.
Of course there is.
So that ruins it, I'm afraid. But Apple has announced that what was being called the Spaceship Campus, or Apple Campus 2, is actually going to be called Apple Park and is nearly ready. And we've been waiting for a while. It was supposed to be ready in mid-2015. So it's been delayed and delayed, and the costs have gone up and gone up.
This is Apple's global headquarters.
Yes, in Santa Clara in California. So at the moment they're based in one Infinite Loop, very famous building, but they are moving, they're upscaling to a larger campus with more of a sort of countryside feel. It's more sort of greenery. So the Apple Park, as we have to call it, has been designed by Norman Foster's company, Foster and Partners, I think it is, and it's amazing, and it looks like a spaceship. It looks like a flying saucer. It's circular, and it's got it's like a ring. It has a big green area. It's full of green area. Green area in the middle, which contains, as I said, an orchard and a meadow and a pond.
Does it have apples, like real ones?
Well, I don't know. When you say an orchard, does that automatically imply you can have a pear orchard, can you? Could you have, for example, an orange orchard?
Well, actually, I think technically it's fruit trees because it's no longer the case, unfortunately. But in my old house, when we had multiple fruit trees, we technically had an orchard.
You're like a landowner, a feudal baron.
Yeah, but then we moved from that small terraced house to another slightly larger terraced house, so...
That's good. Much like Apple in that sense.
Yes.
You upscaled.
Yes, to our new campus.
To your large campus.
So has this campus been as like anally designed as the last one? Because
it is a ring.
Whee! Oh,
can we cut that out as well?
No.
This is not increasing gender diversity in the workplace.
Yes, it is. So all the interior wood comes... Don't.
No.
Comes from one particular species of maple.
Yeah.
Which has now died out.
Yeah. And not only that, but it has to always be the heartwood from each maple. So they threw away the rest of the tree.
Because, in that Steve Jobs biography, the Isaacson one, is talking about how Jobs obsessed over the building of the last campus and how.
That might actually be.
Or was it even this one?
That might be this one because it's been on the cards for many, many years. And when they were doing the early work, Steve Jobs asked Foster and Partners that he be considered part of the team and not a client.
Right.
Which I'm sure they were like, oh, yes,
Steve.
Well done
yes.
for that architectural drawing you just did.
just but yet, a circle. stick drawing.
And they give the engineers, fix this. It's 2.8 million square foot, which is...
Is that big? I never know.
Well, no, it's pretty big. The Googleplex is more than 3 million square foot.
Where's that?
What? Googleplex, you know where Google is.
Mountain View.
Where is that?
It's the same area, broadly.
Yeah,
it's in California.
I think it's also Santa Clara. And Microsoft's campus in Redmond is over 8 million square foot. Wow. So they do get bigger. But this one looks nicer than the others. It doesn't seem to... I mean, returning to this idea you mentioned before about pool tables and basketball and all the rest of it, there seems to be a bit less of that sort of dot-com bubble nonsense that you get in some of the other places.
Well, Google's moved away from it for exactly that reason. Like, they're quite clear about the fact that they felt it was hindering their diversity agenda in recruitment. So, you know, all those things are kind of there, but that's not what they sell. They've also got, even in London, they've got the garden on the roof where people, you know, make herbs and they grow herbs.
So great.
And the restaurants, which you can use at any time, you know, which is intended to, it was a slightly strange line to tread, but it's intended to make people's family, because they can bring their family in to use the restaurants. But it does also encourage people to work long hours.
That's interesting, because Jobs was always big on collaborative space, and he always wanted Apple's buildings to be like huge open corridors that people from...
Hence the circle, isn't it?
So you walk around and bump into like teams who you wouldn't normally work with, and sort of like, I don't know, whatever they want to say, like grow
ideas. You
get
ideas. The software and the hardware, you know, for example. Yeah. That's one example of the
But it does reflect organisations, doesn't it? Because then you've got, you know, you say Microsoft, which is in Redmond, is huge, and that is very much the case with Microsoft, but I would imagine it's a slightly different vibe in the building. Amazon famously, in the same area as Microsoft, really stripped back. You have to buy your own coffee and drinks and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
free books, though.
And the idea is... So, absolutely, as with all organisations, they want you to be a customer of the organisation you work for, but they want you to think value and yield all the time, so... I mean, it's also quite tight, but it's about being functional and utilitarian. Apple's about design, right? Apple is a design company, essentially.
Well, it's a statement of values. It took me back to the Apple Store. You remember when they first came out with the Apple Store, and it seemed like an absolutely mad idea at the time because everybody was moving out of bricks and mortar. But really, it was just one big advert for the company. It was a statement of their values that says we are about premium and design. And
well, it's also Apple Stores are also the most lucrative transactional space in the US. They overtook Best Buy years ago. And again, it is a statement of values, but what's really smart, it is a really smart use of space as well, because there is no till for you to go to. So you can buy anywhere as long as that person can get to you. And it works. You know, the process to purchase is so much easier and more attractive. So it's kind of, that's a very Apple thing. The headquarters may not be, but the stores are designed in a way that, yes, says we are Apple, and it's all about this kind of lifestyle and these design values, but it's also about wringing money out of your pockets, and it's very successful.
It's very clever. I went into the Apple Store in Regent Street, has been redone recently, and there's huge trees in there, and everyone's really nice.
You say that like that's like they're trying to get money off you.
Yeah, no. I suppose they are. I don't know where they are, and they did. But
how dare they be nice?
I know. What would
it's a trick?
What would the ideal IDG office look like? Would we have an orchard?
It's like the office we've got now.
We
sort of have got an orchard. We've got some plants on the balcony.
We've got an orchard that grows
Adrian grows a little chili, doesn't he?
He does grow chilies, yes. Yeah, that's right.
We're not allowed toasters, though.
Are we not allowed toasters?
Or
Chris Norman, going to name and shame, says we can't have toasters because it's a fire hazard. Wow. So our bread remains soft.
I don't really agree with the idea of breakfast in the office anyway, though. I think you should
have
breakfast when you wake up, then go to work.
Are you 100%. Disgusted as we all slurp our porridge?
Not disgusted. I feel like I couldn't do that.
We had that work experience guy that time who I was eating my cereal at my desk, and he just couldn't get his head around it. Like, so you knew that. It was work experience rather than internship, so it was like his first time in an office, but you knew that he was going to go back to his school and be like, they would say, what was it like? And he'd be like, they had cereal at their desk.
Well, was this kid like 15 and was like very entrenched in routine?
Basically.
And he was like,
who's
this joker?
Yeah. This is what you're talking about, isn't it? Like, this is getting used to office life. Yeah. He had no idea that's how it worked.
So these people who are going to Apple or Google or whatever, they're going to think it's all about, you know, leisure time and collaboration. It's like grinding misery.
It's like, Virgin who, Richard Branson always shouts about how his employees have unlimited holiday, but then they actually do contractually, but none of them use it.
Yeah, of course. So it creates a culture of it's a bit like the Google unlimited free food thing. It's intended that
I would do so well there.
Well, yeah, completely. And it sounds brilliant, but what it's intended as a lifestyle balancing thing. But what happens is, in order to see your family, you invite them in and they eat with you, and then you go back to work. Kind of thing.
That's kind of sinister, isn't it? I don't like the idea.
And unlimited holiday is classically that, isn't it? Because if you haven't got a number to take, you're not going to take the number. So then it actually becomes a race to see who can take the least amount of holiday.
Yeah.
There's a thing about skeletons in in tech headquarters, I noticed. The Amazon headquarters, it may be stripped back, but they have a bear skeleton. Because they have like a visitor tour at the Amazon headquarters, and that's supposed to show that they learn from their mistakes, because that was sold on Amazon, was it called Auctions? That thing they had for a bit, and it got replaced, it didn't work, and it got replaced with Amazon Marketplace or whatever.
Yeah, so they were competing with eBay at one point, and then eBay wants to compete with
them. Big dead bear is to remind them that.
Well, I suppose it has elements of that. But yeah, at one point you could buy, I mean, somebody did buy a bear skeleton.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
And there's a dinosaur skeleton at the Googleplex as well.
There used to be, when our founder, Patrick McGovern, was alive, in his office, he had a fake Patrick McGovern, which he used to sit at his desk, which you could see from MIT, which all of our profits go to fund. His idea, slightly eccentric man, was that if anybody at MIT looked up, they'd see him looking down at them, earning money for them, so they'd work harder on their research.
And sometimes they see that there were two. Yeah. He's working really hard today.
I reckon he really just used it for one of those car sharing lanes.
Yeah. He'd tuck it under the duvet when he wanted to sneak out for a midnight snack.
Ferris Bueller style. Good. All right, let's go around the room. Spaceship or waste of space? Henry Burrell.
I quite like it. Spaceship.
David Price.
Yeah, I love it. Spaceship.
Miriam Harris.
Spaceship.
Wow, that's very positive. We're really on trend today. We're agreeing with each other a little bit too much. Let's see if we can break that in the in the final section. I am sailing home again.
Cross the MWC.
Wonder where he was going.
Took a long way to get there.
Meandering.
Henry Burrell, you're off to Barcelona on Sunday, and what are you going to see?
Hopefully more renditions of that. Mobile World Congress is coming up. Every year it does the same. It's become, in the media, kind of a very consumer-focused event. But, I mean, when you actually go there, it's a very B2B event, really.
Yeah.
There are thousands upon thousands of companies there vying for floor space and various sort of food stalls. But what we cover are the handsets, so I'm going to try not to break any NDAs. But there should be a fair few coming out.
Tell us about them.
Well, BlackBerry, LG, Huawei, Motorola, Nokia and Sony will all release phones or announce phones.
So
on a very busy Sunday.
As ever, there's no Apple there.
Nope. They've
Samsung?
Got too many orchards.
Or Samsung you mentioned.
Samsung will be there, but the phone that probably most people are excited about this year, the S8, won't be there.
Okay.
We think they'll be announcing a tablet instead.
And we've had the news from OnePlus already this year.
Yeah, OnePlus, they will simmer away for a bit until later in the year, I think.
So which of these ones that we're going to find out about MWC are you most excited about?
I love a BlackBerry, as do you. I don't think that it matters anymore. Think it matters anymore, though, but it will be the fourth BlackBerry with Android on it.
Are you really good BlackBerry fans?
Yeah, Matt is, yeah. I mean, we don't use them, but we like the idea of them.
They're all just hugely expensive, but they make really good... They've never stopped making really good handsets.
Yeah, the hardware is amazing, but BlackBerry 10 is dead on its ass as a operating system. So they're doing what is codenamed, and we already know this, actually, because they previewed it at CES. They're doing something that LG is doing by actually not really trying to hide what they're doing to drum up sort of... It's kind of like a double bluff. They've just kind of already announced it at CES, but there was no press conference. And now on the Saturday, unfortunately, we can't go. Press conference for the BlackBerry Mercury, as it's codenamed. And it's got like a keyboard and it runs full Android.
Is it named after Freddie Mercury?
Or the planet? I don't know.
Or the god.
Or the substance you shouldn't drink.
Messages.
All of the above.
Yeah.
I hope it's Freddie there. I hope you can get a little sort of moustache case.
Don't think it's Queen affiliated.
little yellow leather jacket.
I mean, BlackBerry are kind of grasping at straws, so they could pull May out the back.
I've played on two different towns, Queen-themed slot machines.
Right, wonder where you were going with that.
So, you know, we know that the lads are up for a brand extension. I'm just saying, BlackBerry, give them a call.
We might. LG has also done a weird thing where they've sent out several press releases in the past week confirming different aspects of the phone without actually announcing it. So we know it's called the G6. We kind of know what it's going to look like because of a leak that they didn't want. And we know how big the screen will be and everything. It's going to have a taller 18:9 screen. So that's pretty exciting.
LG makes good phones, right?
They do make good phones. They're just struggling to capture the European market.
Yeah.
They're very big in Korea.
Also, I don't like the fact that they rebranded the LG as Life's Good when it used to mean Lucky Gold Star.
Lucky Gold Star, yeah.
Stick to Lucky Gold Star, right?
Right.
It is a little bit more...
I think
Life's
Good is more just their slogan, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not actually the company name.
But they don't like it if you refer to them as Lucky Gold Star.
No.
I'm sure they don't.
Why not?
Where are they from? Why are they called Lucky Gold Star?
Oh,
it's a terrible name.
They're South Korean, and it's because the original company in the 50s was put together by two different companies. One was called Gold Star, and one was called like Luck A or whatever. And the westernized, it was like two Korean words. And
I feel like I've stumbled onto the world leading expert on LG name.
They thought it would play really well, and I suspect it maybe did in the US in the early days. But
Then they only rebranded in like the 80s, so they were called that up till then.
Lucky Gold Star.
It's good. I've changed my mind. I like it now.
Cool. Huawei will have another phone, but they always do. Motorola G5 probably will come out.
So that could be exciting.
G5's good, yeah.
If it's the right... Because Motorola's had great success with relatively low price, really good handsets.
Yeah, it'll be decent phone. It'll be like 150 quid probably, and they'll do well with that. Nokia, I know Neil covered it on the pod the other day. They're going to go through a nostalgia fest with the 3310, but I'm not that bothered about that. They will probably, hopefully, announce their rumoured high-end Android phone.
So that's pretty smart, though, if you think about it, because they'll get lots of headlines about the 3310 and then slip in the fact that they've actually got a proper product that's out there.
That may not be announced, though, but we think there might actually be four Nokia phones announced, which is pretty crazy. But they're doing what BlackBerry did, and it's not actually Nokia designing it. They're outsourcing.
Yeah.
But that's just the detail, isn't it? Then Sony
Lucky
will
Gold Star.
Sony will Sony will probably have tons of phones with baffling names.
Should we call you Lucky Gold Star?
Oh. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind.
Did you just drop your Sony phone?
I dropped my Sony phone.
Yeah. So right, Sony always
Unlucky Gold Star.
Sony confound us with tons of handset releases week
with X's and Z's
and numbers everywhere. They might switch back to a 6-month flagship update cycle, which is insane. Imagine if you had a new iPhone every 6 months. That's what Sony does, and it's wondering why it's not working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People just don't update that often anymore, do they?
No, especially if they own Sony.
Not yearly, but
yeah.
It's a bit weird because a few years ago, I mean, like probably 3 or 4 years ago, Sony had a brief period where the Xperia phones were really, because Sony is a brand name.
Yeah.
It resonates in a way that only really Apple and Samsung do. You know, in different markets.
I think they are losing that with new generations of consumers, completely. Though. Because like the Z3, that was amazing. It was waterproof, it was affordable. And then the small one, the compact, had the same specs as the flagship. But that was such a good model. And they've ruined it now. Only one of their phones is waterproof. And the thing that they used to really differentiate on, which was 2-day battery life, pretty much, and waterproofing, they kind of let it go. And now they're trying to play catch up with something that they basically brought to market, which is really annoying.
Well, and also
to watch.
They like the Xperia Z3, was it Z3 you just said?
Yeah.
It was like this Sony I've got, which, and again, I don't know the brand name.
Z5,
thank you.
Sorry.
But it's big square kind of, and like deliberately sort of slightly chunky.
Yeah.
In a way that, again, really works because it was against the way everything else was going. And it, you know, it's really comfortable in the pocket and what have you, but it looks and feels different to some other phones, but they've also slightly rolled back on that as well, I think.
Yeah, they have a bit. I think we're probably likely to see more of a Samsung-esque edge-to-edge display. True. Everyone's loving that at the moment. I mean, yeah, as I referenced, the Samsung S8, which will probably be announced in March, it's going to have a probably rumoured 6.2-inch screen, which is insane. And it's going to probably cost thousands, but they'll probably sell a bucket load. But MWC is an event. I mean, I mean, we go for the handsets, like I said, but the way I was looking at the way it's marketed to the B2B space, and it just doesn't mean anything. They have a tagline every year. They have had for a few years now. This year's Mobile World Congress 2017, the next element. And then last year it was mobile is everything. Year before that, it was the edge of innovation.
Ooh.
I think basically...
Is it really wearable?
Ambiguous.
Yeah, they have wearables there. They announced the S... Oh, I'm going to get it wrong now. No, they announced the Samsung wearables, usually at IFA. There's a smattering of wearables. A couple of years ago, it was a massive deal, but it's not now. I think
it used to be, and maybe it still is, but I haven't been for years, but it was about like the business that was done there was networks getting together and, you know, standardizations groups. And it was really B2B. It was about, you know, people actually deciding to buy middle and low-level handsets for their network to sell. You know.
Yeah, I would hazard a guess that it's probably becoming slightly less important as a meeting place, but thousands of meetings go on there. I mean, when you go, sometimes the handset thing kind of feels like a sideshow because there are just so many meetings, and also, like you say, they call it tracks of like conversations about 5G, which doesn't actually exist yet. I think MWC is basically waiting until 5G is a thing, and then they can really actually talk about it because every year they call it things like, you know, the next element or resurrection or
6G.
Die harder, whatever. But yeah, no, it should be interesting. That's not to do it a disservice. It's a lot of fun, and the handset guys come out in force, and usually by competing with each other, tend to shake it up a little bit because smartphones have got a little bit boring.
Well, we will be no doubt awarding our Best in Show.
Yes, we will be there handing out various small placards to people.
Posing for awkward photos.
Well, I was going to say, if you're interested in that kind of thing, if you're interested in awkward photos of Henry shaking hands with people.
Yeah, slide into my DMs and I will awkwardly shake your hand.
At Tech Advisor, it's the place to go. What about you guys, Miriam, David? Do you have any interest in MWC?
I wish I could go because it's in Barcelona. But other than that...
Same. Yeah.
It's not like when we used to go on trips, David. They actually do work nowadays.
What?
Yeah. On a Sunday and everything.
This is none of that. Scandalous. You insisting that we go to Hooters in Las Vegas.
None of this is true.
Some of it's true.
Well, it's true in the sense that somebody else insisted.
Is it true that David took his Xbox to Las Vegas?
It's true that he rang a hotel and asked if he would be allowed to take his Xbox in order that he had something to do in the evening.
And yet this year, Chris has been trying to get this plan to take the Nintendo, what's it name?
The Kinect. Switch. Yeah.
Well, I always call it
if it exists.
If it does exist, yeah. It could be. I'm going to check.
What with it being under embargo and all that?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I don't know. We'll ask.
We'll cut this out. Yeah. Cut it all out.
All right. That might be the best idea. Okay, let's go around the room. Phone home or give a starving dog a rubber bone.
What?
It was in a rush. Henry Burrell.
Which one's good?
Phone home.
Phone home.
David Price?
I'm going to give a starving dog a rubber bone.
Yes.
Although it won't actually help, will it? Because if it's starving.
Exactly, that's why it's a bad thing.
Oh, yeah. You're trolling the dog.
Miriam Harris.
Yeah, I'd say that one too, but I can't remember how it goes.
You have to say it.
Give a starving dog
give
a
starving
rubber
dog a rubber bone.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad we've cleared up everything. So thanks for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Do get in touch, let us know your thoughts and opinions. Tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or go to at Tech Advisor to see Henry shaking hands with various smartphone dignitaries. We'll be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Goodbye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.